Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where we might not be a Hydra, but we love a nice plate of calamari. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 94 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 5, Episode 15 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., entitled Rise and Shine, which aired March 30th, 2018.
And this episode was written by Eden Baghdad-Chi, a couple of Slingshot episodes written by him, and this is his first episode to write for the series, and then directed by familiar director Jesse Bochco. So this was a very interesting episode, and I can't wait to talk about it because, I don't know, it had that same nostalgic flair in terms of going back into the flavor of earlier episodes, but I kind of felt like, yes, this is the S.H.I.E.L.D. that I've been wanting in this second half.
Yeah, and to say they caught me off guard with the S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra Alliance would be an understatement.
Yeah. And just loved everyone's part in it, including General Talbot. And of course, in show news, we have to mention the return of Adrian Pazdar as General Talbot. And it's just so nice to get a culmination of what he's been up to since he was shot in the head by the Daisy LMD, because I really do feel like we got a full flavor for that. And then, of course, Reed Diamond going way into the vault to pull out Daniel Whitehall in this wonderful flashback, which really helped a lot for a villain in General Hale that I felt was kind of weak, and giving her backstory really just helped flesh things out for her.
Yeah. And I think you really have to be careful when you take the approach as they did tonight with the 28 years ago, 2 years ago, present day, but it just flowed so easily.
Right. It could have easily gone off the rails with that stuff, but and then tying it into today. So I really like what they did. And the actress that they got, it wasn't able to get her name that played young General Hale, but she really did look like a young version of that same actress. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, she looks so familiar. But again, I didn't get a chance to look up her name either. But she was great. Yeah,
we'll put that out to the listeners, see what they come up with. But let's go ahead and get into our episode discussion.
Well, Mike, I think the first thing I want to talk about has to do with the present, or the future, I guess, if you will. But that idea, as Fitz contends, that the future is fixed, and what kind of an impact that's going to have on the characters as they move forward.
Well, yeah, because on the one hand, they see it as an advantage because they have this invulnerability idea. But on the other hand, that kind of makes it difficult for them to make changes that they want to have happen to avoid all the destruction.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't Simmons, this whole idea that she is invincible now that, as she tells Fitz, we know we make it to the future. So it's almost as if we're bulletproof. And as I said, if it was anybody other than Simmons, I think we could really be worried about her survivability as S.H.I.E.L.D. heads into the last part of the season.
Well, I think it's great because, of course, Mac was giving Simmons a warning about Elena's behavior seeming a little off with her invincibility complex. But Simmons just kind of goes, interesting. And yeah, it doesn't really necessarily seem to fit with her character to have taken that particular twist. But I guess it's the scientist in her and how she knew Fitz would react to that news.
Yeah, and it started me thinking whether or not maybe somebody else will fall because of their recklessness. Because yeah, I think that seems as if we're headed in that direction. I started thinking, all right, well, what secondary character could go down? And at this point, as I think Daisy or May says, we don't have a whole lot of team members anymore. So,
yeah, but that could totally be it. It would be something where they are reckless and then they realize their mistake and what the overconfidence that they had has done. and then they changed their tune. So yeah, this is a really interesting tidbit to kind of nitpick a little.
Okay, and what's the deal with Fitz's tool? And I loved the way she broke to Fitz about who Deke really is, but the fact that both tools are now in the present, does that prove that, as he says, the future is fixed?
Well, I think it mostly is like what you said before, that it's a detail that helps her show that Deke did inherit it from his grandfather. I don't know that there's a deeper message in that they're both there, but I think she's saying that because Deke exists rather than the multi-tool, although I guess the multi-tool too, but mostly because Deke is born, we will survive to at least have his mother, right? Same way that Elena saw herself.
Right. So, and of course, Fitz's reaction was priceless
in
the epilogue, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But we get a little bit of General Hale's origin story, and Hale, for me, went from a character, maybe hate is a bit too strong, but I love Hale now, and it has more to do than just simply that she wants to form an alliance, and maybe she's not as evil as I thought.
Yeah, the motivation that she had to make some real change in the world, maybe obviously for the wrong people, but the fact that she was shot down by Whitehall in such a discriminatory way that really just spoke more to her gender than to her abilities, you kind of feel sympathy for her. And this is kind of like the culmination of something she's waited for a long time.
Yeah. And that scene with her at the Hydra boarding school and, you know, Whitehall speaking to her class and her being the female in a man's world. Now, 28 years ago makes this 1990. So certainly women had come a long way. Still, it's a man's world. And you could tell that by the number of women that were in the classroom scenes. And it was just a handful. But I love the Von Strucker appearance. I love the fact that while she doesn't kick his ass, right? I guess it's like he's put two guys up to, you know, throwing those added weights on her bar.
Yeah. And it's just basically schoolroom antics, really. But the fact that we know that Baron Von Strucker becomes the much more headstrong person that we saw in an earlier season, it makes sense when you see his roots. But I what I thought was the best little detail was the fact that the flashback began with her very happy in this Hydra school with the announcement that comes over, Rise and Shine, which gives us the name of the episode. And she has her dog there because obviously that goes to back to John Garrett when he recruited Ward and made him kill that dog. We realize that that is a ritual, a rite of passage for anybody that's being brought into the fold.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I just misspoke because she does kick Von Strucker's ass. It's just that he wasn't one of the ones that put the weights. She just knew that he put them up to it.
Right.
And then, of course, she's willing to do that. Or maybe it's just that she doesn't think about the implications. But of course, the first reaction is that she has now screwed any chance she'll have of getting a good placement. And of course, that's, I think, really anything but the truth, because she does get the placement she apparently wanted, which is deep cover inside the U.S. Air Force. It's just that she wasn't gung-ho for Whitehall's artificial insemination or whatever he's planning to do. I mean, it certainly sounds like that.
And when I think she had full confidence in what she could do. I think it was Sidwell, actually, that thought she may have shot her chances. And what a great appearance by another great actor that looked just like the actor that played Sidwell in season one and, in, of course, in the Avengers movies and elsewhere. So just really great callbacks to earlier characters that were either embedded in S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra that we met later.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, you mentioned the final test with the dog, and it's something that I missed on my first viewing. I see her handing that, you know, at first I thought, okay, she's curled up a belt. Now, how is that a test? I'm thinking, all right. But of course, it's the dog's collar, and certainly we saw it with Ward. But I guess it's that ability to do whatever it takes, no matter the cost. And it gets me to, again, thinking what Fitz has done to Daisy, that despite the fact that he knows she'll never forgive him. And of course, she tells him that, he realizes that as he sees things, he has to do it. And it's the tough call, and I got to do it no matter the cost.
Right. It has something to do with, in their minds, to take adversity and move it to your advantage.
Yeah. And in terms of advantage, I guess the one thing that this child that she will eventually bear is seemingly set to become Hydra's new leader. And he gives her a choice, and she initially balks, but then at the end, hail Hydra.
Yeah, well, it wasn't much of a choice, that no. look on his face. But I tell you, it's very interesting to me that the compression chamber, or whatever it's called, that she wanted to become part of and Von Strucker did instead. Are we to believe that that was what created Carl Creel? Because they mentioned that it's supposed to give someone the ability to become or take on the properties of any substance. Because, you know, they asked the class, what properties do you think we should take on? And someone said the Tesseract. And she said, well, how about something from outer space? So did you read that the same way, that Von Strucker then was responsible for creating Creel?
Well, I didn't read it that way then, but now that you say it, those certainly are the characteristics of his abilities. So, you know, it would certainly seem that way.
Because otherwise it did seem to intermingle with the prospect of her bearing the future leader of Hydra. And I thought, well, are we supposed to believe that Ruby was the one that was being prepped to have those abilities? And does she have abilities anyway? Like, was she bred genetically to have some sort of certain makeup that gave her powers? So I'll be interesting to see how that pans out, because I think we haven't seen the last of how that flashback ties into Ruby's existence.
Well, yeah, and I think Hale even says that later in the episode, that she was bred to mm-hmm. be the Hydra leader. But, you know, before we get too far, what'd you think of the uniforms? I thought it was an awesome touch.
Well, yeah, and I like how it's tied in with Ruby kind of haphazardly putting hers on, because, of course, there's very little Hydra left at that point. But, yeah, the school uniforms with the squid on the jackets almost looked Harry Potter-esque with the different houses, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, I really liked how we're reintroduced to Talbot. And at first, it's in that flashback when they learn that S.H.I.E.L.D. has captured Gideon Malik. And, you know, Talbot enters with his team to take down the general in charge. I forget his name, Fisher, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't realize that Hale is also a Hydra plaid. He still assumes that she's, you know, U.S. Air Force. And we hear that designation we've already heard, which is the Confederacy, but we're thrown a lot about, you know, the aliens and the Confederacy. And
he gives her a little key card of something, giving her this little device that communicates with the Kree as well.
Right. I think it's that machine. He tells her where it's hidden and to take care of it. And of course, we see that later. But we also see Ruby in this scene on her graduation day, and she won't kill her dog.
Mm-hmm. She thinks it's an outdated test in this day and age. And perhaps it is. But at the same time, what does it say about Ruby? I mean, she obviously seemed to love the dog, but there is no dog in the scenes that we initially met her in. So did she kill the dog? Did they take the dog from her? Is it a source of why she's so angry at her mother and wanting to get revenge? Because didn't she seem like a happier person in the flashback?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, her mother shoots the other guy, which then precludes her from having to kill her dog, almost as if you don't have to go through what I went through.
Yeah, it does seem to be that way, where she's remembering how hard it was for her, and she doesn't want that for Ruby. So there's definitely some love that is being displayed by General Hale, but also there seemed to be more affection on the part of Ruby in those scenes than we see now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when her mom mentions about possibly having been an astronaut, and it just, you know, oh, mom.
That's cool.
You're right. You would have really been cool then. Not that I don't think you're cool. I mean, she doesn't say that, but as you said, there's that mother-daughter bond that we certainly haven't seen up to this point. And then she tells Ruby that we're the last two. Well, the last two what?
The last two of Hydra? I mean, that bunker certainly is very empty, even though someone is supplying the croissants and the fruit.
Yeah. All right. Now, we mentioned, I don't know if it was last week, maybe the week before, but we mentioned about General Talbot and how much we missed him. He's alive. And we see, you know, that whole 6 months ago, he's in the hospital recovering, relearning basic recognition with his son. And I guess the one nitpick I have is he seemed to really be in a bad state at that point. And it didn't seem as if that much time elapsed from that hospital scene to then when we see him in the Hydra facility.
Yeah, I don't think it was that much time. Then it flashed forward 6 months, I think, to where Coulson came on board. But I'm not exactly sure how long he's been there. Don't think it's been terribly long enough for him to grow a beard. But the question I have is he recovered? Or does he still have these violent mood swings? Because you can't really tell with him. Because I think that one of the best parts of his return is once he finds out that Hale is Hydra, and he's the first one to point out, Hail Hydra, really? Or is it Daisy that does it?
That's Daisy.
Okay, but he still has some great quips, including, you know, squids and, you know, I'd rather walk on my own two legs than slither around on eight. I mean, right. Just pure Talbot.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that nitpick that I mentioned, it's very minor. But he does seem to be getting on better. And again, here we are in a scene we see multiple times tonight. We've seen it before. He finds his way to that same break room that we've seen, you know, with Ruby earlier. Ruby walks in, same scenario, walks out. And then Hale confronts Talbot about his lack of control that you were just mentioning. And at this point, I don't think we really see it.
No, that's the thing. Well, it's hard to tell.
It is hard to tell.
He's a volatile guy anyway, but maybe she's just using that detail to sort of manipulate him, because he obviously held out for a long time before he told Hale whatever it is he told her. And he apologized to Phil for that later. But, you know, you have to wonder what is really the goal of bringing Talbot down there? Information only or more?
Well, I think it's probably more. I mean, she takes him to show what she's been working on, and he certainly needs a new purpose. And as the episode goes on and we hear Hale out, it makes sense. And it'll be interesting next week now to see Coulson's reaction now that he's had some time to process, and the same with Talbot. I mean, she still needs the Air Force connection, I do believe.
That's true. And he gives her that somewhat. But yeah, I love that. Just thought of another one that he said to her, calling her a filthy calamari Matahari.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just vintage Talbot.
Absolutely. And to me, that speaks to the fact that he has recovered as opposed to his lack of control.
Right. And I think the lack of control is probably something that will come with therapy anyway. And therapy really is just living life rather than having to go through any kind of exercises. So obviously it wasn't very fun to see him almost hurt his son, but yeah, I mean, being shot in the head, you can forgive him for some minor brain glitches.
Right. And I love the fact that he understands that it really wasn't Daisy Johnson. It was an LMD.
Right. That was nice to hear.
Yeah. So obviously the big plot point in this episode is the notion of a SHIELD Hydra alliance to combat a common enemy. And as I said, as we hear Hale explain things, it makes perfect sense. So we find out that device that she's been given was presented to Earth by aliens so that they could travel through the galaxies to meet them face to face. And of course, we've seen this before. We just didn't understand the nuts and bolts of it.
Right. And I like this explanation on another level, too, because we weren't so pleased two episodes back trying to figure out why Hale worked her way on to Zephyr One, you know, with Ivanov and all the rest of them. It's like, what was her purpose there? Now we know. And it makes much more sense for her to have done it the way she did it if there's an alliance being pursued, which is not something we would have predicted back then.
Right. And so we find out that a protection deal has been struck with the aliens because war is coming to Earth. And of course, we don't know who. And are we certain now that this is Cassius's father?
We are not.
Okay.
But, you know, how could it not be? Just based on what we know of Cassius's history, it seems almost certain.
Okay. Now, obviously, I'm not sure. I was going to say, obviously, Talbot will be a more difficult sell than Coulson, but I'm not sure that that's going to be true. I think they'll probably be equally difficult. But she obviously tries to convince him to join her fight against the aliens. And once they realize that what she's talking about is breaking this deal and working together, protecting ourselves so that we're not beholden, because they're going to want something, right? They want gravitonium, for one thing.
Right. And obviously, Coulson is working from a lot more information than what she has, but it is reassuring to hear that. I mean, there's a number of different things that are different from her confrontation with Talbot and the one with Coulson. I mean, first of all, I love that Coulson goes to the breakfast room, picks up some Cap'n Crunch, and just turns to Ruby and says, "Tell your mother when she's done playing games, I'll be in my room." Because he knows exactly what Ruby's doing. He's the only one that didn't try and pepper her with questions that she was not going to answer. So that was a point for Coulson, I think. And the fact that, you know, he is finally able to tell Hale, at least initially, he didn't give her too many details, the fact that he knows what this leads to and whether or not he can work together with Hale to provide that change in the time loop somehow. But clearly the way she was planning on heading could have led directly to, and might still lead directly to, the destruction that ends up happening, because gravitonium is involved, right?
Or absolutely. And, you know, just to go back to Talbot for a second, he apparently knows where the cache of Hydra material is located, because at that point she doesn't really know what to do with the machine, so that by the time she shows it to Coulson,
she's figured it out.
Right. She calibrates it, tells him to, you know, grab hold. And of course, I love his initial reaction that, no, there's all these alien symbols. Nothing good is going to come of this.
I've visited enough alien planets. Thank you very much.
Right. Now, you know, the other thing, when he tells her about the time travel, everything she's seen, I don't understand why she has a difficult time believing that.
Well, that's easy for us to say, right?
I guess.
But it will probably take a little bit of adjustment time. I think she will be on board. But yeah, we got to give her a little bit of skepticism.
Okay. So she's got to go through this whole idea of showing him the wisdom of helping the Confederacy to ensure humanity's survival. But they want too much in return, right? The gravitonium, they want inhumans, the powered individuals. They basically want everything. And of course, at first, Coulson balks because that's just too much.
And it sounds exactly like what would lead to breaking the Earth apart.
Yes. And certainly he explains all that to her. But then she brings up, and this is what I was mentioning earlier, she mentions that Ruby was optimized for being placed in the infusion chamber to become this individual that basically can save us all. But I love the fact that even though she knows her daughter likely wants this job, she doesn't feel she's ready for it.
Yeah, well, and I think the history that we got through those flashbacks helped a lot with building that sympathy. But again, that infuser, it confuses me, because the powers, as was described by Whitehall, seem to describe Carl Creel, and yet Ruby is the one that's supposed to be infused in that way. But how about the big reveal that the project that Whitehall had in mind was called Codename Destroyer of Worlds? I mean, that almost sent chills down my spine when I realized that that had more implications than what we were originally led to believe, because it could have easily just been a nickname that came after the fact, right?
Oh, right. And certainly we know that that moniker makes its way into the future.
Right. So that was really cool.
Right. So who is the Destroyer of Worlds? And then when she brings up the fact that I don't think Ruby's a good fit, I think Daisy would be perfect.
Right.
So is there something else that she's not telling us? Or does she really truly think Daisy is humanity's best chance? I mean, she mentions she sacrificed her own boyfriend for the greater good.
Yeah, but it's a great little detail, right? Because she may have something in mind that could just be sparing Ruby from it, or thinking she's not ready, because we obviously have seen that animosity between mother and daughter. But the idea that Daisy could be infused with even more power would explain how her quake powers could do so much more than we've seen them ever do before in cracking an entire planet. So that should raise all kinds of red flags for Coulson anyway, even if he wanted to cooperate in that sense. But does that mean Ruby was the original person that was supposed to do whatever the infuser would allow her to do? And is that something that could be changed? Put Ruby in there instead of Daisy, and that might maybe be enough to change the timeline, or no one in the chamber at all. You know?
Well, yeah, and I love that scene when Ruby then comes in to see Coulson, because she thinks that she cracked the Earth apart, right? She thinks she...
Yeah, she overheard the conversation, and she thought it was her.
Right, and we already know about her obsession with Daisy. And, you know, maybe obsession's not a good word, because
she's a fangirl, I think.
Yeah, right, that's much better. Obsession has kind of negative connotations. But once she finds that out, she wants to take on Daisy, what, for the right to be the destroyer of worlds?
Yeah, this is very confusing, but in a good way. I mean, because Ruby wants it. Her mother thinks she's not ready. She thinks of Daisy as the alternative, but we know what that leads to. So I'm thinking of a lot of scenarios, including one where Ruby insists upon going in the infuser. It kills her, or she just can't handle the whatever it does. And then Daisy is put in there, or something else of that nature. But this could be the turning point we've been looking for. We're always wondering what's going to be the one decision that they'll have to change in order to avoid this catastrophic future. This might be it. Although I tend to think it's going to be something else that I can't even predict.
Which would be awesome. But I also really love what they've done with Talbot, because when we first see him in the hospital, he's having difficulty, you know, recognizing pictures. Then he seems to be okay, and he's back to his old self, you know, with all those wisecracks. And then he's brought in, and he's just a broken man because he has told Hydra everything. He just couldn't hold out any longer. I knew S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to come for me. I knew Phil Coulson was going to come for me, but I couldn't hold out. But the irony is that it's probably good that he told them what he did. So I'm really hoping now we see him built back up again, and he embraces his new role in... Look, I think Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. are going to form an alliance. That seems to be a foregone conclusion, don't you think?
Well, especially since, why not? There's so little left of both organizations. They might as well make the best of their strengths and make something completely new.
All right. So speaking of something new, Daisy Johnson's in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Coulson's absence. And I love, you know, just the interconnection between her and Melinda May. And it comes as no surprise. May is still a mentor to her. And as Daisy feels frustrated, May reminds her, hey, we have our own supervillain. And at first I'm thinking, well, who are you talking about?
Exactly. I had no idea until they went to Fitz in his quarters. And I also like that they didn't just dismiss, as we mentioned last week, Daisy's statement, I will never forgive you for this, because she clearly has problems involving him in any way.
Yeah. And I love how they did it, that May talks to him first. And then, of course, Daisy's been watching from the outside, and she comes in the room and again lets him know how she really feels. But I also then love the fact that he tells her, look, I don't have any regrets about what I've done. You know, that would have affected the people in the town and probably much farther beyond.
Yeah, that rift was not going to get closed on its own, and it definitely could have just gotten worse and worse. Not to mention, we've talked about how they had no way of knowing that it wasn't the cause of the rift that broke apart the Earth. I mean, I think we figured it out maybe sooner than they did that it couldn't be, but it's not safe in any way anyway, even if it's not that. So yeah, he didn't have any choice. I like that he is able to come to grips with that. Even if he feels regret in his heart, he's not going to communicate that. He actually is going to double down, I think.
Right. And, you know, as Hale points out, Daisy Johnson killed her own boyfriend for the greater good.
Yeah. And I love how Fitz is willing to point that out. That, you know, do you need me to point out the ways you went off book? Because she has plenty of examples herself.
Yeah. And will she ever be able to forgive him and be able to see the similarities? And I hope it's something that takes time. I think from a narrative standpoint, yeah, that would really, you know, be a strength that the series could explore, as those two have to continue to work together, but there's still that thing between them.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how the dynamics change for the entire group, much less this one that is definitely going to take some healing.
Yeah, but they need his help. Obviously, Daisy is not going to clear him for computer access. And then we see that brief scene where Simmons is working on Elena and her robotic arms, and it appears that they're working at least as Simmons expected them to work at this point. I mean, Elena still looks like she was, you know, unconscious.
Mm-hmm. We'll see it next week, probably, in action.
Yeah, but Mac worries that she's going to continue this feeling of invincibility that we were talking about at the top of the show, simply because she saw herself in the future. And again, just as I said before, just, you know, not to harp on it, but I think they're just setting us up for something that is going to be relatively dramatic, because it just doesn't seem to make sense. You're still human. If somebody comes up to you with a gun and shoots you, you're going to die.
And if you have any hope in being able to change things, then you cannot be so cavalier about things that you think you know about the future. It does seem strange, especially for Simmons. But it's interesting, too, from the standpoint of Mac is going to Simmons for sympathy and perhaps getting none. Maybe she thinks, okay, well, I'm with Elena on this one, you know?
Yeah. The other thing that Daisy's kind of been forced into a corner, because we've seen Hale, we've seen Coulson, we've seen Ruby, Talbot, all of them have the information they need at their disposal. And as Daisy says, I'm almost operating blind here. And I love May says, you know, first rule of combat, figure out what you have and then figure out how to use it.
But this is what's so surprising. The decision she actually makes,
yeah,
is not one I would have expected her. But again, what else does she have besides Fitz, I guess?
Yeah. So we'll see how Robin can help her, if Robin will help her.
Well, we know that Robin has to get back into the fold somehow. I guess we both thought it would happen sometime after the catastrophe, when everyone was kind of coming together to shelter in one place. But it could be that she's brought back even earlier. And what kind of prophecy will she share now as a young child that will be in any way helpful to them? Because May has to act as a mother to Robin as well. So we know that she has that experience ahead of her, too.
Yeah. And speaking of mothers, one of the best epilogues of the season, Simmons brings food to Fitz. And of course, Fitz doesn't realize it's her at first. At least it doesn't appear that he realizes it. And then she tells him she knows they're going to get through this as a couple. But first she makes kind of, I forget the exact statement, but it's almost as if he is expecting to tell her we're breaking up as a couple.
Yeah, well, he certainly didn't expect her to come in with any kind of sympathy. But I do find it interesting that Simmons comes in to talk about this multi-tool of Deke's. I mean, obviously that's a big reveal, and she did have a nice creative way of revealing it. But was there any talk of throwing up or morning sickness? Or does she know? I mean, or are we wrong altogether?
Well, I don't think we're wrong, but
me
no, there wasn't any mention of it here.
So yeah, I just found that interesting, an interesting omission.
Right. But as she tells him, it means you and I are invincible.
And he's smart, doesn't he? He's like, yeah, you're right.
Yep. So we will see. Just, I mean, really, I don't want to necessarily say best episode of the season, but it's certainly in the conversation.
Well, especially since we needed it, because I just felt like we were having trouble with the second half. I mean, you and I were putting a happy face on it, certainly. I mean, and they were enjoyable, no doubt about it. But it had its weaknesses compared to first half of the season and the wonderful, wonderful season four. So I definitely think this put things back on the right track.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if we've got this final pod, which is the Hydra-Shield Alliance.
Exactly. So I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And can't wait to see what happens with the Cree. Can't wait to see what happens with Daisy in the leadership role. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to look forward to. Well, we also always look forward to Faith's Kolsaz report, and she has some more for us again. Interesting battle that went on last week because of the fact that Coulson had two choices and Daisy had the third. So here's Faith with last week's results and this week's choices.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the Kolsaz report. We've had 2 weeks with only three contenders, but this week I bring you six. Okay, but before we get to those, here's the winner from last week. Daisy takes the mantle with Faith, or Xanax.
They're gonna be fine.
They'll figure it out. Have faith, or a, you know, Xanax.
And now for this week's contenders. Number one of all the blindfolds.
I see they've shown you to your new accommodations.
Of all the blindfolds I've forcibly worn, that was one of the nicest.
Number two, CrossFit Tink.
CrossFit Tinkerbell is your daughter? I've known you 20 years. You never once mentioned having a child.
Number three, C+.
Is this supposed to keep me off balance or something? Having me stumble out to an Econo Lodge Continental breakfast? I give this ploy a C-. Hey, wait a minute. Oops, all berries. Okay, C+.
Number four, homeschooling.
That girl, the member of your team I haven't met yet. Is she the one responsible for cutting my agent's arms off?
That's my daughter, Ruby.
Seems like a major strike against homeschooling.
Number five, recommend medication.
You can't beat her.
Yes, I can. Where is she?
I can't tell you, but I can recommend some medication. Preferably at a high dosage.
And number six, a deke.
Do you see what this means?
Yeah, I do. It means that our daughter's obviously going to marry some belligerent space goon if she's going to give birth to a deke.
Did I miss your favorite moment? Hopefully not. Please be sure to join Taltos next week in tweeting your favorites to FBMC with the hashtag Kolsaz. To vote for this week's contenders, please visit facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. While you do that, I'm going to go have a bowl of Cap'n Crunch. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, some great ones there again. Glad to see lots of people with their humor back in form. And so lots of great choices for you on the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/agentsofshieldgsm. But let's get into our feedback because we got a resurgence in feedback again this week. So that was good to hear. I guess people were getting ready for the holidays and people are off this week. So let's dive right into it, starting with Skimmins. She says, loving Hale killing the teacher because he threatened Ruby over the dog. Her and now we're the only two left line was just icing on the cake. Ha, to CrossFit Tinkerbell and Calamari Matahari. He's not Coulson, but Talbot had good sass this week. Ruby continues to be the most interesting part of the Hale plot. That's true. I have to say that the last 15 minutes of this episode really bumped it up for me because while the Hale stuff was arguably needed, it wasn't really anything new to other Hydra agents we had seen, so it didn't shine any new light on her. I felt her stuff was an overall okay at best, but the last 15 minutes with everyone bumped this up to a low good for me. Oh man, Skimmin still has the low good scores here. I really hated Mac asking Gemma, did she need Fitz's help to complete the surgery on Yo-Yo? It just felt so insulting, as you never see anyone asking Fitz if he needs help operating on Daisy, so he doesn't kill her or any time he's suddenly doing biology, even though he's always been engineering. It's like this and that annoy me with the handling of Fitzsimmons at times. Gemma is just as capable of things as Fitz. So how about giving her the respect she deserves, Mac? And she's not wrong about that, Dave.
Right. And the example with what Fitz did to Daisy, you know, it was almost just so horrific to watch that not only didn't he need any help, what would you do?
Exactly.
Other than maybe try to stop him.
Right. But it's true. It did seem very much out of character for Mac to ask Gemma if she needed help or Fitz's help. Because she's the one that usually does the medical stuff. No, of course she doesn't need Fitz's help. Anyway.
Right, because she's certainly capable technologically in the medical field. And that's what she's doing here.
Exactly. I did love Daisy staying angry at Fitz this week, because it would have been really inorganic if she suddenly was just kind of upset with him. But overall, they were pals. So great continuity with that plot. I get he wants to help, but can Fitz really fault Daisy for keeping him locked up? They don't know when he's going to have another break, and he was the one questioning himself before. So his temper tantrum about not being let out was kind of annoying in the final scenes. I like Gemma being intrigued by Yo-Yo's invincible theory, but someone seriously needs to tell her she died in the future. Because girl, no, do not be going rogue right now. That's true. I don't know if anyone knows that besides us as the audience, so maybe no one can tell her that besides Robin. I'm surprised they're buying into the future images, because wasn't the whole point of coming back to change the future? Just because Deke is there with his memories doesn't mean his future is set. If it is, that means S.H.I.E.L.D. fails, and again, aren't they trying to change that? So if you think you live, Yo-Yo and Gemma, wouldn't you be more into protecting yourself than others on missions as that invincibility would potentially change? True, that bit of future could hold and you live a long time, but it's not a guarantee, especially when you're actively trying to change things. And I guess Skimmins is agreeing with our counter argument as well. I would argue being fan favorites otherwise would mean they're safe, but if this is the final season and even Coulson could die, then all bets are off. Very true. Could the future footage of Daisy getting off Zephyr be her chasing down Ruby, who's trying to enter the chamber? Oh, I like that. Could it be them fighting that causes it to explode and cause a rip? Daisy fears it's her who's guilty, and Ruby wants it to be herself who's inside, but is either actually the one who should? I think that's a great theory, Skimmins. Having them fight over it could be what causes it.
Oh, I love it. All right, well, we heard from Earthmover again, who says, "What's up, guys? Completely blown away by tonight's episode. All the throwbacks and the MCU tie-ins. How about Agent Sitwell right from the start? Hydra.
That was awesome.
Steve Rogers. List goes on. It was great to get the whole backstory on Hale, Ruby, and where the name Destroyer of Worlds came from. And can't wait to see how Daisy reacts when she finds out what it actually means." With the recent news of Clark Gregg starring in the upcoming Captain Marvel movie, I really want to believe that in one way or another, part of these throwbacks could be tied to Captain Marvel, what with General Hale joining the Air Force and about the dream of becoming an astronaut.
Now, just as an aside, Clark Gregg is in the Captain Marvel movie. He is not starring in any capacity.
Okay.
Very small role, according to the articles.
Now, also, seeing that alien ship and the talk about the invasion of Earth really wants me to believe this is an Infinity War tie-in. I know the ship shown in the episode doesn't belong to Thanos, but Coulson did say he was told about the alien warships. I'm still baffled at who the Confederacy are supposed to be, but the blue writing looks very similar to the language of the Skrulls, as does the Shadow Guy himself, as Coulson nicely put it.
Oh, wouldn't that be a nice twist that it wasn't Kree at all?
Now, little bonus scene at the end was funny with Fitz's reaction to being a grandfather. And I imagine in next week's episode, we'll get a Fitz-Deke scene together. But that's about it for me today. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Thanks, guys. Earth Mover out.
And he's right. I did like the fact that Fitz was like, "But he's such a dweeb," or whatever he said when he realized that Deke was his grandson. So great. All right. Well, let's hear from Taltos. She says, "I find it hard to believe that the Chronicoms wouldn't have known that humans were communicating with the Confederacy. Whether or not it's the direct cause of the Earth breaking apart, wouldn't it have been brought up as a possible factor? Given Hale's interest in exploring space for Hydra resources and wanting to become an astronaut, I wonder if she had any involvement in Project Distant Star and sending people to Maveth." Ah, that's very good. Yeah, possibly. Fitzsimmons now has two versions of the same multi-tool. I wonder if it could be used to determine if the timeline can be changed. I wonder if she means something like, you know, Back to the Future, where one of them vanishes or something like that.
But wouldn't it have already vanished?
Only if they changed things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Gemma joining Elena's We're Invincible Club is a bit concerning. Yeah, you think? If they could figure out the timeline rules, it could possibly keep certain characters from making reckless decisions. And there's that word reckless that you use, Dave. Hale has a device that can transport her to an alien ship, but refuses to even listen to Coulson to talk about time travel.
Thank you.
That was your point. Yes. She got very defensive as soon as it was hinted her actions could lead to Earth's destruction and seemed to immediately conclude Coulson was saying she wasn't a capable leader because she was a woman. I doubt this will be the last time we see her treatment by Hydra affect her judgment and predict that her failure to overcome her past will lead to her downfall. And I think that is a very good prediction and a very safe one.
All right. Now, Faith checked in and says, I love the use of people waking up to do all the transitions. That was a nice editing choice. The episode overall was just okay to me, but I'm super curious about what torture methods were used on Talbot to get him to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I assume we won't have to wait long since Coulson is most likely taking the same path.
Yeah.
P.S. Hale gives a whole new, sort of kind of literal, meaning to the jab, feminazi.
Yeah, because, you know, even Daisy was still calling Hydra Nazis. Oh, man, we're still dealing with those Nazis. So, yeah, good one there, Faith. And we heard from Don at the last minute, so we got his in on this week's podcast. Don says, I was shocked how much I liked this episode. I was dreading another Hydra branch that somehow had been missed in the Malak cleansing and got something else, in my opinion, entirely. If, as stated, Hale and Ruby are the last two, then it wasn't missed. It was hidden, which is a different thing entirely. The intimation I'm getting is that Whitehall never recorded anything about Ruby in any of the records that were captured. He may have been waiting on results, but seeing that young Baron von Strucker was involved, the project certainly wasn't a total secret. So while Ruby not being in Hydra records may make sense, getting General Hale and any links to her, like her family, out of them seems to be a bit much to take. And if she was in the records, she would have been taken. That's my only quibble. And again, I think it can't be a coincidence that the powers that the Infuser seems to impart are very similar to Carl Creel's. So maybe that was Strucker's attempt. Who knows? I don't know. So maybe that would explain why Ruby was still able to be kept a secret. The final exam with the callback to season one and Ward was nice. The final exam, that's a nice way to put the killing of a dog. It made sense out of something that up till now was puzzling. Yeah, that's true. And more than a bit sick. It was also nice to see Reed Diamond back for a couple of rather meaningful scenes. Unless I'm misreading something, the device is what was used to create, here we go, Carl Creel's power, which again is a nice bit of closure. Thank you. I'm glad Don agrees with me on that. A very satisfying episode, although I'm wondering if Simmons isn't doing a mind game on Fitz with her invincible bit. I don't know if we'd call it a mind game, but I do think it's a little bit weird for Simmons to be reacting that way. It just seems not out of character, really, but just surprising that she would go that route.
Yeah. Now, Don also had an addendum that he got in a little bit after that when he says, one thing I forgot, General Hale does not expect to survive this as a free woman. She thinks that either she will die or be imprisoned. So she's doing this for Ruby and not Hydra in any way, shape or form, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's as good a guess as any, because if there's one thing we've been lacking in a bad way up until now, it's a motivation for Hale. And so now we're seeing a little bit more because of her backstory. And thank goodness, because it was desperately needed.
Well, yeah, but don't you think the motivation is really to save the Earth?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. It's just kind of fuzzy as to how she thinks her current situation leads to that.
Okay.
So I think both people, both Hale and Coulson, are going to have to shift their perspectives somewhat to meet some kind of middle ground. And I think the discussions between them are going to be what creates the realization that this decision or that decision is what leads to the destruction of the Earth. But can't wait to see how it comes out, because I think we're on the path to battling the future that happens and also battling whatever alien is in that giant ship that's on its way. So much more exciting as the stakes are raised. But thanks very much for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at S.H.I.E.L.D. _GSM, and our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. GSM, which is also where you can vote on the Cole Sass Report.
And Mike and I will be back next week with our discussion of episode 16 of season 5 entitled Inside Voices. But remember, after the episode airs, head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or you can call 304-837-2278.
And if you get a chance, please rate and review The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right, Mike, I'm going to go down to the break room and see if Tinkerbell left any donuts.